This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
It was the best of times, it was the worst of times, declared Charles Dickens in the opening statements of his book, A Tale of Two Cities. What were those cities? Well, let's just skip to the heart of the matter. The heart of the matter is that there was a political understanding, a viewpoint that took place in those days called the Enlightenment. Everybody was profoundly enlightened. At least they thought so. And in the midst of the so-called profound enlightenment came an effort to try to bring equity, inclusion, bring everybody together, make everybody feel good. Because not everybody did feel good, so everybody had to feel good, and it had to be enforced upon the people. So it began, a lawyer by the name of Robespierre just really thought that he had the world by the tail, and he could fix it all. And so they launched what has been known as the French Revolution. Well, it began in rather modest ways, but it metastasized very quickly. Very quickly, especially for those who lost their heads on Madame Guillotine. But that was not enough. They had to take down the entire establishment. They had to take down the priests, the church, the businesses, authority, all authority. They had to take it all down in the pursuit of ultimate virtue. They were all virtue signaling, and in order to capture the virtue, they had to take off more heads, and that became known as the Great Terror. It was so great a terror that even Robespierre himself, having been declared Messiah, the next day had his head removed. You see, once these kinds of efforts begin, they just take off. They have a spirit of their own, and that's what happened with the launching of DEI in America. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. Where there is no real diversity, no equity, and no inclusion. By including everybody, nobody got any attention except those who wanted power. And so today on Viewpoint, we're going to take a look at this DEI expose. Our special guest, Dr. Stanley Ridgely. I told him that's the last time I'm going to mention the word doctor, because he, whether being a full professor of strategic management at Drexel University, he also has this doctorate and master's in international relations and security from Duke University. In other words, he's a master of everything, but he also has a passion concerning this matter of diversity, equity, and inclusion. He says this has got to stop. It's got to be exposed. And he's joining us today on Viewpoint. Stan, it's good to have you on the program, my friend.
Chuck, I am delighted to be here. You're an erudite guy. You got a great group of listeners out there, and I look forward to our conversation.
Well, thank you. Indeed, it is a conversation. We don't do interviews here. We do conversations. And as I look at your book, you call it a con story, and indeed it is a con story. DEI provided an easy path to absolution for imagined sins and a tonic for those eager to repair their damaged egos for the public perception of the virtuous, of virtuousness. In other words, virtue, the pursuit of virtue, was supposed to be the salvation from victimhood, but it created more victims indeed, didn't it?
I think it did. I think the evidence has been laid out for us over the last 5 years. It is a great con game. It's a wonderful con game if you're a con artist and you admire that sort of thing. The idea that these supposed victims are going to seek absolution from the universities, or rather give absolution to the universities, mythical villains, and mythical victims. And that was the great subterfuge that opened the gates to a great mass of mediocre bureaucrats who entered the campus with very little skills to show for anything they were going to do, and basically began to train our students, our faculty, and our staff in a primitive Manichaean ideology of good versus evil, villains and victims. And it's, as I said, it's a con game, and it's a wonderful scam, and attracted a lot of grifters.
Well, when you lose virtue in the country, you've got to concoct an artificial virtue. And unfortunately, that's what happened. I'm thinking back to 1992 when Forbes magazine, the premier business magazine in America at that time, was celebrating its 75th anniversary. And the entire half-inch thick magazine was devoted to answering the question, whatever happened to virtue in America? The whole magazine, whatever happened to virtue in America? Well, now, instead of embracing the true virtues that were characteristic of our country and were characteristic of the Christian foundations of the country, then you had to replace them with artificial virtues. And I think that that was the foundation of DEI. Now we can be virtuous people. We don't have to follow the original virtues, but which we don't want to follow. We'll create artificial ones.
Well, I think you're right, Chuck. I think the admiration and the embrace of DEI is by a mainly white liberal is about making themselves feel good. It's about communicating to other people that, hey, look at me.
Right.
I am virtuous. I'm doing the right thing, and you ought to do the right thing too. That DEI, what's wrong with this? Moral, right, noble, and proper, isn't it? Just common sense, right? And this is basically looking at DEI as an empty decanter, and I'm filling this decanter with my own virtue, my own vanity, my own desire to be able to say I'm a good person.
Right.
Look at me. Look at me. I'm a good person. And if you disagree with this, well, then, of course, there's a problem with you, and we know what that problem is.
Well, the college campuses had long abandoned the nature of sin and the concept of sin as described in the Bible, and so we have to now have other sins. We're going to make up new sins because we don't want to follow what the Bible had to say about sin and salvation. No, we're going to create a new sin and salvation situation. And if you don't follow diversity, equity, and inclusion, you are the ultimate of sinners and must suffer.
I think you're right. I think that this idea of sin has been co-opted where you have, it's called getting comfortable with difference. And tell students to basically turn off their critical faculties. Turn it off and get comfortable with difference. Whatever it is out there, you're going to get comfortable with it, if not outright celebrate it. It means any kind of deviancy that comes down the pipe, you've got to celebrate it. You've got to be comfortable with this. You're not supposed to make value judgments. And I think that's the great crime the universities have been committing on our students is the idea that they're not going to commit, they're not going to make value judgments, the kind of value judgments that you and I consider, the heart of a virtuous life.
Exactly. Well, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the senator back in the 60s, coined a phrase, defining virtue down, defining deviancy down. And that's exactly what's been happening, defining deviancy down. It's happening at every level of education, not just in the college campuses, but you have a unique position there because that's the world in which you live and have worked for years, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I see it every day. I see it sometimes it's worse on some days, other days it's not. but there's a concentrated effort to get you to suspend your faculties, not make the value, not get the common sense judgment that you make on the street.
We'll talk more about that after this break. Hang in there, my friend. We'll be right back. DEI Exposed.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Chrismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Vain intellectuals and their fellow travelers of the campus would pay anything to shed their guilt and restore their elevated self-conception, including payment of fabulous sums of scarce financial resources. They could again become good people or virtuous. That's what we're talking about here with the exposure of DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion with our special guest, Stan Ridgely. I want to make his book available to you. It is quite a piece of work, and I think for many of our listeners, it's going to be quite valuable. It's a $28 book, yours for $26 on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. If you're writing a check, add $6 for postage and handling. We'll get the book DEI Exposed in your hand, How the Biggest Con of the Century Almost Toppled Higher Education. Well, it's almost toppled our businesses, too, at the same time, hasn't it, Stan?
It surely has. The DEI made a conscious effort, a kind of a united front, at the unfortunate death of George Floyd back in 2020 mm-hmm. and the BLM riots of the summer of 2020. We saw DEI make a concerted push as one of the major social justice causes. And we saw all kinds of fringe causes marching in behind them, opened the doors to the university to all kinds of nonsense. It's very much like Jesse Jackson back in the 80s and 90s when he was doing his protection racket. When he would approach a business and say, nice business you got there, you know, it'd be a shame if something happened to it. Why don't you drop a donation on my Operation Push and we'll make sure nothing happens. You remember that, right?
Oh, yeah. He's not the only one that tried to play that game. There are others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, DEI is the same way. The DEI people, you know what? We got all these riots going on here. Nice university you got there. It'd be a shame if something happened to it. Open up your doors, let our DEI officers come on the campus, train up your students and faculty, pay us lavish salaries up to and including $300,000 to $500,000 a year for the top DEI people, and we'll train your people and make sure that nothing untoward happens on your campus. And
it's almost like an extortion racket.
Yes, it is. And the bonus is that you get absolution, and you can consider yourself a good person again.
Yeah, your cultural sins will all be forgiven, and now you can be respected and honored as a company, having embraced DEI
right.
and publicly acknowledged it and promoted it. Your salvation is secured. You're protected forever.
And no demonstrations out front of your business. No blackballing of your business. It's almost like selling indulgences.
Uh-oh. Well, gee, we're actually, you know, we're kind of analogizing to the things that have been part of human history, and we need mm-hmm. to acknowledge them for what they are.
Yeah, I think that the idea we're going to sell you absolution and a reputation for being a good corporate citizen for the corporations, a good university citizen, and then we're going to lay out this incredible bureaucracy that's going to basically coerce young people, our college students and our faculty, to believe this ideology, this racialist ideology, that really has no basis in fact.
Yeah. Okay. You mentioned before the last break this matter of feelings, catering to people's feelings. And I don't know how long you've been in the educational field. When did you begin your educational sojourn as a professor?
About 20 years ago.
Okay. I want to take you back to 1968. Back to 1968, actually it's 1967, when I began teaching public school in Southern California. Mm-hmm. And I taught for 9 years. That's when the spirit of this began. Now, you didn't recognize it as diversity, equity, and inclusion, but here's how it began. The public school teachers had been indoctrinated by the very liberal professors into a whole new kind of thinking. And that thinking was, we're no longer speak in terms of facts. We're no longer going to speak in terms of the verities of life, but we're going to speak in terms of feelings. Everything had to be expressed in terms of feelings because we don't want to offend anybody, of course. So they actually required us on the weekends to go to special language training sessions to learn new speak, how to speak in this new language of feelings. And they called it the encounter groups. You're going to encounter truth. And so you're going to have these encounter groups. You're going to learn from now on, you're not going to speak in terms of facts. You're not going to speak in terms of truth. No, you have to speak in terms of I feel, I feel, I feel. Well, that metastasized through the entire culture, even in our churches. I watched it happen throughout the 1970s into the 1980s. It spawned the entire divorce culture. Everything fell in the face of I feel, I feel. Well, then when you lose any sense of moral integrity and conviction concerning traditional morals and sin, now you have a problem. You have emptiness. You still have feelings, but they're not connected with anything. So now you got to create a whole new sense of sin and salvation. And I think that was the trajectory, how it began in the late 1960s. So that's my perception. I've been around a long time. I think some people think I'm just slightly younger than Noah. So anyway, Stan, that's where we are. And now the question is, what do we do about it? We know, I have an article here, we know that Target, which was one of the worst offenders in terms of businesses, that just completely fell to the demands of DEI and came up with the most amazing products and so on that were utterly ridiculous, trying to seduce our young people into the worst kinds of perversion and so on, all in the name of DEI. Now Target says, we're not targeting that anymore, but it seems to me they really are, just under the current.
Yeah, well, you know, George Will, the great political writer, many years ago, called this sort of thing mainstreaming deviancy, to get people to try to normalize it, to get people to accept it as somehow right and proper, that it's just like, you know, just anything. It's just like anything else. You just got to get comfortable with that difference by putting it in your face. Now, the average person is not going to put up with that, but only so long. And I think we see that the shareholders, the stockholders of these companies like Target, even Apple, certainly Ford Motor Company, a lot of these other companies are saying, look, we want to buy trucks. We want to buy ice cream. We want to buy, you know, products. We don't want to, we want to buy beer. We're not interested in you pontificating at us about our politics.
In other words, we want you to be included in owning our trucks and our cars. We want you to have an equitable experience so that everybody can buy our vehicles, and we want it to be so universal that everybody, whether they're black, white, green, purple, or chartreuse, or poor or wealthy, are going to have. It's going to be such a diverse experience. That's true diversity, equity, and inclusion, isn't it?
Well, you know, I teach in a business school. I teach in a business school. There are cases that are going to be written about this craziness that went on over the last 5 years, where businesses simply seem to forget what they're in business to do. They're in business to serve customers, and they're in business to give them products that they want at a price they're willing to pay. And they're not supposed to be acting according to an ideology that it portrays a fake reality. And when you start doing that, you really alienate your customer base. I think Bud Light saw that very clearly.
And another
International Harvester did. I think, of course, Target did, of course. And we see that these companies are finally waking up to the fact that they've forgotten the basic machinations of business and what they're trying to do and who they're trying to serve.
In other words, why they're in business. So you go to the Northeast, excuse me, the Northwest, and you've got all these big companies out there, including Starbucks, including Costco, and all of them. All of them went woke with DEI, every one of them.
Yeah, I think that people have a misconception about DEI to begin with, which is it stems from this feelings-based ethos that you've mentioned, and the fact that people don't really understand what DEI is. It's vague. It sounds good. it's anodyne, and it has some sort of noble-sounding words of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so people are left to fill up an empty decanter with their own vanity,
right,
their own virtue, and they don't really understand what it is. I wish I had a dollar for every time someone wanted to tell me, well, you just don't understand DEI. You need to learn what real DEI is. And I said, believe me, I know what it is. I've read over 200 of these, reviewed over 200 of these books, and I've read over 1,000 of these articles from primary sources, the people who mm-hmm. actually propound this nonsense on the campuses.
Yeah.
And the issue is basically, you don't understand. It's not about creating a level playing field. It's not about lifting up marginalized people. It's not about giving everyone a shot at the brass ring or just teaching about slavery. It's about imposing an ideology on our children, mm-hmm. our students, our faculty on the campus.
That actually divides people into camps and puts fences around them labeled DEI. And if you don't stay in those camps, you are eligible to be destroyed one way or the other. Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. I want to make your book available here, DEI Exposed. How the biggest con of the century almost toppled higher education. Friends, this is not just some simple little book. It's a 400-plus page book, and you're gonna learn a lot. You're going to gain insights that perhaps you have not had, and it's a $28 book, yours for $26. It's on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. And what we're doing here, as you know, my dear listeners, is we're confronting the deepest issues of America's heart and home. This is one of those, and it has deep spiritual connections. Stan, I don't know if you are aware of it, but this program is a very strongly Christian program, and we look at things from that perspective, and we're not hesitant to do so either. And when I look at DEI and the distortion and perversion of truth, the distortion and perversion of that which is noble by elevating that which is ignoble, what we're really doing is looking at a massive spiritual problem that has virtually taken over the country. And now with Donald Trump having come in, he said, we're not going to play this game anymore. We're not going to allow this to happen. And you might want to rectify this before you destroy yourselves economically. Tell us what Donald Trump has done in this regard.
Oh, well, Chuck, I have to tell you, I haven't been optimistic about higher education in the last, at least 5 or 6 years, but
right.
I'm optimistic today. The raft of executive orders, particularly three that concerned the ending of DEI in the federal government, the ending of putting pressure on schools to end their anti-Semitic environments, and ending DEI in colleges and universities that receive federal funding, it's been magnificent. Also, the recent executive order, which ended the disparate impact philosophy or doctrine in legal affairs,
mm-hmm.
the idea that you can win a court case about discrimination simply by showing that the company's results of, say, selection and hiring has some sort of disparate results measured against some means, I can win a case without even proving that this company was guilty of discrimination.
Right.
So he has done a heck of a lot, and the impact on higher education has been profound, I have to say. I've been reeling from the it's hard to keep up with the information. It's hard to keep up with the impact. I've done numerous interviews with newspapers and shows about the latest executive order, and then I find out that something else has come out in the last 24 hours, and got to poop myself up and get smart on that. It's been absolutely phenomenal. The universities are on their back foot. They're playing defense, and I think it's absolutely phenomenal. I think that Hillsdale College, Grove City, and a number of other colleges have had to put up with the federal government trying to meddle in their
And they refused to capitulate because there's not a dollar of federal money they had received. We'll be right back after this, friends, with Stan Ridgely, the book DEI Exposed. Much more on the table. We'll be right back.
There is so much more about Chuck Chrismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, SaveUS.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at SaveUS.org.
If all whites are racist, then probably only white persons can be racist, right? That's the whole presupposition of DEI, and you can see how damaging it is because there's no way you could prove yourself innocent. You're guilty by virtue of your birth. That is a problem. You talk about inclusion. That is exclusion to the max, and you can see how artificial and phony all of the reasoning is concerning this DEI paranoia, as our guest today has called it in his book, Paranoia and Virtuous Victimhood. Stan, let's go back. You had mentioned Floyd back there in 2020. Do you believe that's when this really started, this final move, kind of like the French Revolution, to really create the thrust to bring people to the DEI guillotine?
I like the analogy. I think it was the last barrier betwixt the barbarians and the university. I think that they flooded onto the campus. I think this was the trigger, and the universities didn't want that kind of fiery unrest coming to the universities. They were ready to confess to anything. They were ready to accept guilt for anything. I think you look at the Princeton University on July 4, 2020, 300 faculty and staff signed a letter that said, Princeton University is rampant racism everywhere. Well, a journalist, Connor Friedersdorf at The Atlantic, said, hey, I'm going to contact all 300 of the signatories, and I'm going to give them the opportunity to tell me, what are the examples of overt racism on the Princeton campus that you can name over the last 15 years? This is 300 people, 15 years, and not a single example of the rampant racism. This is a fraud. It was a fraud that was designed to it's called a resource extraction strategy. Uh-huh. Virtuous victimhood is what the psychologists call it. It's a con game. It has a name. Virtuous victimhood. I'm going to be the victim, and I'm going to convince you that you are the villain that has persecuted me, and you're going to transfer resources to me.
Well, you know, this is exactly, Stan, what happens in the law, particularly in criminal cases, particularly when the federal government is involved. This is what happened with regard to the January 6th victims, those who were arrested and sought out, and they were told, look, you either confess to your guilt concerning this, or you're going to suffer eternal consequences, and we're going to make sure it happens. So, in other words, they're forced to confess that which is not true,
right,
in order to gain some sort of freedom from the advance of the, we'll call them the DEI specialists in government that are there not to accomplish justice, but to convict as many as possible for political purposes. It's exactly the same kind of motivation, and to me, that is despicable.
Sounds like communist China during the Cultural Revolution.
Exactly.
Where you're putting people through struggle sessions, getting them to confess to something, anything, get the pain, to get the accusations to stop. And then and only then can the reconstruction of the individual and the re-education of that individual begin. And this is what's happening on the college campuses. Seen it myself. Been a part of it. I attend these DEI. I'm going to go to one tomorrow, as a matter of fact.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, yeah,
Why would you suffer that kind of ridiculousness? Doesn't it cause you mental suffering to be in those situations?
Well, I tell you what, I give them a lot more mental suffering than what they provide to me. When my smiling face turns up, it's a real problem for them. They have to watch what they say. And I think it's important that we understand what we're talking about. I don't want to be throwing stones from the outside. I want to know what's going on.
Exactly. In other words, you want to be an educated resistor. Yes. Okay, let's go back to George Floyd. Yes. Why do you think that catapulted this DEI thing into the entire country virally?
Well, it has a lot to do with branding, and I say this from a business perspective. It was called a racial reckoning. That whole nonsense of the summer of love, the summer of riots, was called a racial reckoning. And it came at a time when America was already kind of addled by the COVID pandemic. They had already been hit with this compliance mentality from the federal government, told to distance each from each other, told they had to stay in, closing of businesses, and suddenly we've got this these activists who are being given free rein. Racism is a public health matter. That means that you can demonstrate and twerk in the streets all you like with impunity, which is kind of absurd from the medical community to say that.
Right.
I think that this kind of was a toxic cocktail that was, I said, the last barrier to break down to get on the university campuses and certainly in the businesses. This idea of a racial reckoning basically laid guilt on every white person in America, or tried to, in any case. And that's the insidious ideology that is at work with DEI. Rather than take individuals as they are, with your personal history, your parentage, all that stuff, instead, the singular aspect of your person is your race. It's what defines you. And this is what defines villains and what defines victims. So if you and I, Chuck, walk down the street and we see a stranger coming towards us, we don't make any judgments about that person. But if DEI ideologue sees that person, they already have categorized that person as either a villain or a victim based on their skin color, based on their race.
All right.
This is what they do.
So you're tried in the culture of opinion out there, general opinion, defined by DEI views, which means there is no way you could ever prove yourself innocent. And that's what happened to the French Revolution. These people were brought before the public assembly and they were guilty without a trial. Away with their heads, away with them, because they didn't fit. They fit this culture of victimhood that was being perpetrated in the name of righteousness, in the name of virtue. So we have exactly the same thing going on here in our country, and it's pretty despicable. These same people that are wanting inclusion are excluding everybody other than the ones they want to include.
That's true. I think that is also a very good analogy to Marxism. Karl Marx's dictate that class consciousness and class struggle is the motive force of history, and the idea that your class defines who you are and who your enemies are. And I think in the Cultural Revolution, Mao's Cultural Revolution, the idea of if you were of bourgeois stock, you were guilty. They looked very hard at your lineage, your parentage. You look at your history, your education. You're an intellectual. You were any hint of having had anything to do with the West. You were marked as a bourgeois enemy, a capitalist roader, and you were tortured and you would be killed. Or maybe you would be rehabilitated in a very long and drawn-out process. It's all they've done is they've taken race and gender and replaced class with that.
What really strikes me, and this goes before George Floyd, and that is Michelle Obama, who comes from very wealthy and upstanding stock, educated, but tries to pretend in her virtue marketing by saying we're down for the struggle, down for the struggle. And it's virtue signaling that's not virtuous, because she is one of those, and she doesn't want to be one of those that all of the others are against. So she's going to virtue signaling by saying, we're down for the struggle.
I think that, you know, using that kind of vernacular, utilize that, they call it code switching. I call it pandering to the audience. Hillary Clinton was guilty of that, too.
Yeah.
Saying, I ain't no ways tired. You know, using some sort of vernacular that she feels is going to, you know, suck up to the crowd.
Creating a false identity, yeah.
Exactly. That kind of thing. Some of the worst offenders are people like Michelle Obama and people like Ibram Kendi, who had very privileged upbringing, and pretend to be downtrodden, to be part of the struggle, the people.
Mm-hmm.
People like Jasmine Crockett, who actually speaks quite, is very articulate and speaks wonderfully.
She's unbelievable. I can't comprehend, unless it's just for personal ego sake, why somebody like that would defame their own race by speaking the way she does.
Yeah, and she doesn't have to. It's an act.
It is a pure act.
Yeah.
A pure act. Wow.
So you see that the fraud, when I say it's the biggest con of the century, there's a whole level of cons. And the idea of George Floyd opening the gates, you have to understand that these DEI hustlers have been out there as consultants. It's called, when they do small-time hustling, it's called peanut grifting. And there are a lot of peanut grifters out there. That's in the book.
Okay.
That's not my contrivance. That's the language of con artists, the peanut grifters. And they were trying to get onto the university campus for a long time, and this was their chance. This was their shot at the big time, the big con. And they came onto the campus, and they ran this virtuous victimhood con game, still running it. But let me tell you, it is slowly, well, not fast enough, but pretty rapidly, I'd say, it's falling apart. DEI offices in a lot of places are simply disappearing. The personnel are being quietly ushered out.
That's right.
The offices themselves are disappearing. Some high profile, like Harvard, they simply rename the offices. They keep the plagiarist who ran the DEI program, named Sherry Charleston. They kept her on, gave her a new title, and they're doing business as usual. That's going to stop, I think, when the federal government takes a good hard look at them again. But basically, it's fading. It's fading fast. There was even an article in Inside Higher Ed that says diversity officers are being shunned on their own campuses. People won't answer their phone call.
Wow.
They can't get face-to-face meetings with the high muckety-mucks. They're just being basically ghosted. I think that's the term that is being used these days. And I think it's a good thing. I think these people are unqualified. They never should have been admitted onto the campus, and they need to be kicked off immediately.
All right. Now, are you actually teaching students in the classroom?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I just got out of a class about 2 hours ago.
And what is the response? They know what you're doing. They understand it. After this break, tell us what the response now of students is concerning this issue. We'll be right back after this. The DEI Exposed, friends, that's the book. How the biggest con of the century almost toppled higher education. Still trying, but almost toppled it. $26 will put this $28 book in your hands on the website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. We'll be right back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Again, Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint. We're talking with Stan Ridgely, who is a professor. What school are you a professor in now, Stan?
I'm Drexel University here in Philadelphia.
Okay. And you've indicated there maybe isn't quite so much brotherly love there as it purports to be.
Oh, in the city, generally, I think at Drexel, we're a very friendly campus. we welcome all. Everyone belongs here.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I left you with a question before the break. Do you remember the question?
Yeah, you were asking me about how students respond to this type of DEI material on the campus.
Exactly.
Well, it never comes up in my classes because I don't bring it up, and it's not part of the – it's completely inappropriate for any professor to be talking about this material, except if it were a subject of study in the sense that we were going to look at this phenomenon in a historical sense as it spread across the country in various schools.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with doing that. Just like you're studying Marxism, communism, the history of socialism, that kind of thing.
Right.
No, I don't. My politics are completely left out of anything I say in the college classroom, and the students very much appreciate that. I've had a lot of people, I'm the faculty advisor for TPUSA, Turning Point USA, which brings a lot of students to my attention in my office hours that have issues with the way they're being treated in terms of anti-Semitic behavior by certain faculty members,
mm-hmm.
by certain functionaries who try to teach seminars and that kind of thing, and I've had to resolve several of these for these students, favorably, I should say. I think that we have been lucky here at Drexel and that we've avoided the vast majority of this type of nonsense that you've seen on the college campuses that oiled the campuses over the past year, which is still does so. We've not had the type of nonsense that's required the defunding of the federal funding from Columbia and from Harvard University and these other universities that are under the spotlight. I think that our administration has been very prudent with respect to what it's done on the subject.
Well, that's wonderful. I'd like to shift just a little bit. It seems to me that the whole anti-Semitic thing vis-a-vis support of the Palestinians is a corollary to the DEI effort. Do you see that?
Oh, very much so. You don't even have to connect the dots on this. I have an entire chapter on it. And the notion is that they're using the template, their villains, victims template, and applying that to the war, half a world away, identifying the Israelis, the Jews, and Israel as colonizers, and the Palestinians, so-called, as victims. And they're using the term settler colonialism, et cetera, et cetera. This is the very same template, and this tells them who to hate. Tells them who to hate and who to love.
In other words, it's another kind of virtue signaling. They're creating artificial sins in order for them to, shall we claim, it's kind of a new religious persuasion, isn't it?
I think so. If you're looking at something that's faith-based, that's evolved from secular philosophy, secular theory, and it's informing people what to do and how to behave. You look at the most extreme version of this, and this is the assassin, Luigi Mangione, who killed this man. He awaits trial so for the ultimate resolution of whether he was guilty or not. Someone killed Brian Thompson.
Well, I think he admitted to killing him, didn't he?
In any event,
the situation is an amazing thing. Here's a guy that purportedly killed a man, shot him in the back, didn't even have the guts to face him head on, shot him in the back. He was the head of a insurance company and then is cheered on by the DEI folk as a hero. How does that happen?
Well, he did what his ideology told him to do. He's very similar to the terrorist that I had to deal with when I was in West Germany during the Cold War, the Baader Meinhof gang, Barbara Meyer. and these people who were all upper middle class people alienated from their society, and were attracted to revolutionary theory and ideology. This guy Mangione learned what he learned from the University of Pennsylvania. He did what his ideology told him to do. It was an anti-capitalist act. It wasn't based on his personal experience. He didn't know this man. He wasn't even a customer of United Health. He simply shot the man in the back because that's what his ideology told him to do. And this is the logical endpoint for these DEI people who believe their ideology with a fervor that is really hard to explain. They are fanatics, and they have to be stopped. And I think the way to stop them is to oust them from the campus, which is happening even as we speak.
All right. So who are the preachers and the evangelists of this movement?
Well, they're the diversity officers that you'll find on most any campus. They man or woman the bureaucracy, the DEI bureaucracy that you'll find. You'll also find them in what's called student affairs, which is where a lot of these DEI people are being transferred to student affairs. This is a really extremist left-wing office.
In other words, so it's a way of hiding, pretending that they're not continuing on with DEI when actually they are.
Exactly. Student affairs or student life or student success office on any college campus is where these people are going. It's where these people are hiding. That is a really a left-wing motivated, I would say, far more so than what you'll find in the faculty. In fact, a colleague of mine, Samuel Abrams, did a study 2 years ago and found that the ratio of liberals to conservatives on the campus is 6-1. But he found in the bureaucracy, which is what we're talking about now, that ratio is 12-1. These people are committed ideologues. They're not faculty. They're not the smartest people, but they know what they want to do. And their motto in one of their professional organizations is called Boldly Transforming Higher Education. These are not faculty. These are functionaries, apparatchiks. And they're the ones we have to – this is where they're harboring the DEI people, moving over to a different part of the bureaucracy without that DEI label. You mentioned Newspeak earlier.
Right.
Changing the language. The left has always been very good about stripping the language of the ability to express certain ideas, seizing certain words and redefining them so their arguments become embedded in the language. And this is what they've been doing for quite some time.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to shift into an area that may or may not resonate with you. But I just finished publishing my 11th book called When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times. And the Bible makes it very clear that in the end of the age, persecution will rise dramatically around the world against Christians. So it'll be anti-Semitism against Jewish people, persecution against Christians. What I see happening is that the very thinking that drives diversity, equity, inclusion, DEI, is also being used to persecute, to drive the anti-Semitism issue against Jews, and also to drive persecution against Christians. What would you say?
That's a very complex question. I'll unpack it. I think you certainly hit the nail on the head with respect to the organized, systematized anti-Semitism on the campus that is supported by the DEI offices.
Yeah, that's the entree to the next iteration, which is the open persecution. Because Christians, true followers of Jesus Christ that have true understanding of what it means to walk in virtue and in righteousness and in holiness, they are unacceptable by this group. Totally unacceptable.
I think you hit the nail again on the head with respect to the orientation that students go through when they come to college, that they are trying to separate students from their parents. They are trying to get you to abandon the traditional values that you may have been imbued with as you were growing up. Certainly, a religion teaches you certain behaviors and teaches you how to make value judgments that are in accord with what we believe to be the good life. Well, this is what they want to, they being the student affairs people and DEI people, want to destroy that. They want to destroy the, and they say this, I should say. They say we want to attack the student's sense of self and sense of identity and replace it with a new belief system that's grounded in critical consciousness and this, you know, this idea of getting comfortable with difference, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so, anything that is a competitor And certainly Christianity is a major competitor with the kind of philosophy and doctrine that is being propounded on the college campus, certainly by this bureaucracy and certainly by DEI. A big competitor, and is incompatible with DEI protocols and doctrine. I think that the proof is in what I've seen. The proof is in what I've seen and what I talk about and what I write about.
Well, I certainly appreciate what you've done here, Stan. You've done a yeoman's job here. We can't all speak about exactly the same thing. And DEI exposed the biggest con of the century, almost toppled higher education, is certainly a very serious and profound subject. And I appreciate what you've done here. Appreciate you coming on the program to talk about it. And I think we've had a very honest and open conversation concerning this. And the spirit of this, there's a religious spirit behind this, which is not good. It's not godly. It's not virtuous. It's a false virtue that's being promoted. And there's a paranoia out there, as you described, a virtuous victimhood. And yep. If this continues, I'm thinking about back in 1994 when the gentleman who was caught up in the Watts riots and put on the front cover, I think it was of Time or Newsweek, and said, "Can't we all get along?" Well, the answer is no, we can't all get along if we're going to embrace a complete difference without anything that truly unites us. And DEI is not about uniting us, it's about dividing us, is it not?
I think that, there's no argument from me on that. I think it's pretty clear cut.
Yeah.
It is a divisive doctrine. It puts us all in categories of either a villain or a victim. And there's no absolution, there's no escape from that.
Yeah, there's no, you can't be absolved of it because you're guilty and there's no way to prove yourself innocent.
Right.
Yeah.
Remember, it's no matter who your parents are, no matter how you were brought up, no matter your education, no matter where you're from,
yeah,
your personal history doesn't matter. It simply doesn't matter to these people.
Yeah. Do you have kids?
I sure do. Three of them.
How old are they?
Well, I'm about as old as you are. I got one 36, I think, now.
Uh-huh.
Another is 34, and another is he's 24.
And how do they feel about this whole thing?
Well,
I'm putting you on the spot, my friend.
We don't talk about that.
Okay. Okay.
When they want to hear what I have to say, I assume they're going to ask me. You know what I mean?
There you go. Okay. Maybe I should send them a copy of your book. Anyway, friends, the book is DEI Exposed. It's a $28 book, yours for $26. It's on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 2-325, right, 55. If you're writing a check, add $6 for postage and handling. And I want to urge you, if you have not already become a partner with us, you know that because of the nature of what we do here, it's very serious. It's about, we're not here to market something. We're not here to sell something. We're not here to fill up airtime. We're here to confront the deepest issues of our hearts and homes from God's eternal perspective. And that being the case, we have not taken on any commercial support for 30 years. Not any commercial support. Why is that? Because to whom you owe the money or who pays you the money, well, you may have to conform to their expectations. That's not why we're here. Which means we're trusting you. We're trusting you if you value this program. Many of you actually set your calendars in order to listen to this program. We have people that set their calendar to listen to this program at 4 a.m. in the morning coming out of the center of San Francisco Bay right next to Alcatraz. That's right. Regular listeners. So how about you becoming a partner with us? Do it today. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us. Go to the website, saveus.org. Consider doing it today. Don't wait for the other guy to do it. Everybody thinks that way. Now's the time. I appreciate what you're doing. appreciate Stan Risley for joining us here on Viewpoint today. And get a copy of his book, DEI Exposed. God bless and be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismier. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.